Hello everybody, we're going to start the workshop. My name is Jim, and I am an adult child of an alcoholic. So good to be here. I also want to announce that I'm really nervous right now. I wanted to take a charge off of that by sharing my truth with you guys. So I'd like to just get started by joining in, if you care to, prayer of connection, the serenity prayer, followed by a few moments of silence. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you. So today's workshop is all about breaking the no, don't trust rule. Claudia B. came up with three life skills that we didn't learn as adult children growing up in alcoholic families or other dysfunctional families. Don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel. Without having these life-affirming skills, we're pretty much left at a loss. That really limits our self-growth and development, and then we turn to others to focus our lives upon. And so growing up as a child or even as an adult, when somebody would ask me, how do you feel, Jim? And I'd say, oh, fine. That was my standard answer. And then by nature of working the 12-step program, I realized that I had no trust in this thing called God or a higher power, or myself, or any of you for that matter. But intuitively, I knew that there was something going on here that I really wanted to latch on to, but I had no idea how to do it. And so I started to work the 12 steps in another fellowship because that addiction was killing me more than my ACA stuff. And so I got attached to learning how to trust. And even after that, years later, I realized that there wasn't really a way that I could really hold on to and tangibly have a method of knowing how to trust, because while I grew up in my ACA family, my thought of trust was about, you shouldn't feel that way, don't trust my feelings. Trust your elders, and so on and so forth. And so my concept of trust was virtually non-existent, not there. And because my trust had been betrayed so many times, I just shut down in that domain of my life. But by coming into 12-step recovery, I had to really get in touch with that ability to trust, because how else can I work the steps? I had to trust the loving higher power. I had to trust the program. I had to trust the fellowship. And all these things were the furthest thing that I wanted to do. So by really digging deep throughout the years of my recovery, because not only did ACA save that measly life that I had growing up, but it also gave me a whole brand new way to live. And that's why I'm here today. I already started doing workshops just to get over my fear of public speaking. And that's evolved into a sense of having a worthwhile message to carry to all of you throughout the years. Developing a sense of trust in the program, my higher power, and in me, that I could deliver it to you. And having to hold back those feelings of inadequacy, those thoughts of unworthiness, who am I to give a workshop or anything like that. So all of this work that I've done culminated in a lot of the workshops that I present, all the challenges that I had to face to get out of my ACA way of thinking and feeling and things like that. So by focusing on this one aspect of breaking the don't trust rule, it's all about personal boundary setting. And it's about me having to decide that I had to take a chance on something. I had to take a chance on somebody. I had to take a chance on this higher power concept. And thank God it was not my parents. So I just wanted to start off the workshop by playing a song for you. It's all about not trusting. Perhaps some of you will recognize the lyrics, some not, but hopefully it'll have some meaning to you. So it's located on the back side of your cover sheet. And try to get a hold of the feelings behind it. Can you take them back there? How's that song for you?
Pretty.
Could you relate to it?
Profound.
There's one word deeply associated with the song, and that's called isolation. We isolate because we don't know how to trust. And when we don't trust, we get shut down. So the walls and barriers of trust not only keep out all the hurt, pain, and sorrow and suffering from coming in, it also prevents all the love and the goodness from coming in as well, too. The wall is indiscriminate. It can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. On the cover sheet here, Navigating your way through powerlessness to trustworthy relationships. When you don't trust, you're powerless. And so I've given some visual examples, having to have a roadmap. It's just a roadmap.
Like a treasure map.
Treasure map. The treasure is you. In the middle here, we have a signal light, red, yellow, and green. That's part of the boundary system that you will be really advised of how to work that boundary system in a way that it works for you. This is just a compass. Finding out where your spiritual and emotional compass lies, not anybody else's compass, but yours. In the case of emergency, run like hell. There's a time when you get to a place when there's an emergency arises and you need to stand up and face your fear. Don't run like hell, but in the beginning, trust your instincts. This is a trust meter. Right now, it's at zero. That's how I came into the program. My trust meter, not only was it zero, but it was broken. The last symbol, closed mind ahead. I had to make a discernment whether or not a person was open, honest, vulnerable, or closed off, shaming, and belittling. Here's a little quote. A person that is not trustworthy is not worthy of friendship. That's the bottom line boundary. Balancing relationships with trust and boundaries in action. Trust awareness and appropriateness is required for personal safety in all situations. I cannot turn off my trust radar. The lower the amount of trustworthiness, the greater the need for boundary setting. Then on the other hand, the greater the amount of trustworthiness, the lesser the need for boundary setting. When somebody has stepped into your life, you've allowed them and they've not broken boundaries, and they appear to be really trustworthy candidates in your life. And know that trustworthiness can change. Remain aware of the need for boundary adjustments. That just because you can trust somebody or even yourself today, does not mean that it's going to be necessarily true in the future. Just be aware. Then on the bottom here is a really, really important chart that you can use. Powerlessness, empowerment, and powerlessness again. Whatever it is that you're dealing with in recovery, if you've got too little of whatever it is that's necessarily to get things going, that keeps you stuck. That's powerlessness. When you're able to take healthy risks and reach out and learn more about what you need to be learning about, that's when you're displaying an appropriate amount of risk, of trust-taking. And then again, if you go into the process by trusting too much, just spilling your guts out to a complete stranger and things like that, and not really taking responsibility for that information that you just shared intimately with a stranger, you can get hurt. And so coming from an ACA family, I can work both sides of the street, both sides of the fence. I can be completely shut down and you can't get near me. And then there are times when I let my guard down too much and then I get hurt. So either way, whenever your trust compass is out of balance, just know that it's a choice. That if you have an awareness of what is and what isn't, you can develop a sensible feeling of knowing what you need to be doing to take care of yourself. So appropriate trust is the middle balancing point. If you're not doing it enough, you're keeping yourself powerless. If you're doing it too much, you're also keeping yourself powerless. So the workshop goes into, well, what does that look like? What does it mean that I'm giving away when I don't know what trust looks like? And so that's what I attempt to accomplish today, just to give you a model of trust that you can live by. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, levels of trust, boundaries, and action. This is the circle of trust. At the very outside of the circle, I call that firm boundaries, trust not yet earned, superficial, a light public relationship, casual, familiar, association, maybe a little bit of mutuality, but for the greater majority, you keep guarded and vigilant because you don't know about this person, place, or thing entering into your life. You put your feelers out. You don't open up all the way, but yet you don't keep closing down all the way. You need to be able to take a risk and say, well, what is it that I need to do in order to assess this person, place, or thing coming into my life? So in the middle, it's called establish trust and respect. This is where a lot of trustworthy people will reside in your life. And it's about companionship, similar interests, friendship, similar belief systems. It's a small majority of a trusted few. And then within your inner circle of trust, this is where you establish the deepest trust and respect. And this is the hardest part for an ACA to try to reach. Intimacy. So the opposite is the problem of isolation. I knew how to isolate really well, but how to be intimate is like, no thank you. As much as I could imagine that I wanted it, I didn't trust myself enough. I didn't trust my partner. I didn't trust my friends or whatever it was. And so I always kept everybody, people, places, and things at arm's length. And so I wanted you guys to just take a look about your trust choices. I've listed a whole bunch, a line item of questions, and I'd like you to just make a spontaneous reactive type of writing, and you can either go on I do or don't trust my higher power because, and keep it short and sweet. Don't write essays. And so I'd like to be able to give you just a couple minutes to go through this chart. You don't have to answer all the questions, just read through the questions and answer the ones that are most meaningful to you, not to the most meaningful to people in the group, but the questions most meaningful to you that you'd like to answer. Okay, just about a minute or two. Has anybody answered a question that they'd like to share with the group? We're only going to take about two or three people. Show of hands, anybody like to volunteer? Please.
I need to trust myself because I am warning.
Thank you.
I don't trust my higher power because of past experience. I don't trust myself because I frequently disappoint me. And I don't need to trust because I isolate.
That's quite a litany of distrust. Thank you. Last one.
I don't trust my higher power because it means giving up control.
Thank you. I don't trust my higher power because it means that I'm giving up control. So just by looking at the questions, seeing what came up for you emotionally and your thoughts, would you say that you have a very healthy relationship with trust, or perhaps a little bit iffy? Okay. So on our next sheet, we're going to take the upper part first and then the second part. The upper part, there's a green color here. It means that it's a green light to a relationship. On the bottom half, it's delineated by the color red, and that usually means stop. Common question?
Yes. I was wondering what kind of a definition you have for trust.
We'll get there.
Oh.
Thank you. We'll get there. And this is building upon my definition of trust that I like to share with you. And eventually, just know that these are just definitions chosen by a fellow traveler. What works, you can keep on your sheets, and you will have a sheet. And what doesn't work, it's up to you. You have the final say, you have the choice, and with choice comes responsibility. So I'm just kind of like painting a picture of what it can look like, and you guys get to do the work and say, that works, that doesn't work, this works, or whatever. But by and large, just taking consideration, these are pretty good guideline models as I see it. Okay, thank you. Can I get somebody to read the top half of the sheet? Volunteer, please.
Allowed.
Okay.
Top half. Trust is trustworthiness, a personal choice and pledge to thine own self be true. Dependence based upon past experience and satisfactory performance. A necessary component for the growth and development of relationships. Making agreements to define boundaries. Earned without guarantee and not given away without just cause. Exercising reasonable caution and patience. Consistent responsibility and accountability. Creating community and building relationships through shared values. Standing up to perceived violations. Prudent risk-taking and vulnerability. Taking initiative to reconcile and amend. Reliance on character, truth, strength, competence, and credibility. Choosing responsibility over blame. Making things right pronto.
Reciprocity
in sharing and caring action. Follow through of amends and forgiveness.
How are these words received to you right now? Your thoughts and feelings. If they were true, would that be a good thing?
Empowering.
Very good. So, my example here was established because I only knew the bottom half of the sheet. And so in my trust recovery process, I had to learn about abstinence of thought and feelings and behavior. So I had to develop a place to jump to look for trustworthiness in people. So what were my standards of trustworthiness? And these can be your standards or not. So the activity displayed here is all about having trust goals or targets that work for you and have that as a measure or a standard of how to evaluate people, places, and things. So, can I have a volunteer to read the second part?
Distrust is damaged or devastated trust. When a person, place, or thing violates boundaries and agreements, withholding vital information, cheating, lying, saying one thing and doing another, mind reading and wishful thinking, being dependent on abusive people, refusing to trust or be trusted. Extremes equal trusting too much or too little. Having unrealistic expectations, conscious betrayal of trust, breaking an agreement and refusing to reconcile or be accountable for one's actions. Staying in a relationship where trust has been repeatedly broken beyond repair. Denying highly important personal values. Shaming and blaming an action. Neglect and irresponsibility. Refusing to address perceived violations. Choosing to be a victim or perpetrator. And unwilling to apologize and make amends.
So how is this list of characteristics of distrust?
Familiar. Familiar is what feels abusive.
Does it feel empowering or disempowering? Any comments on either half of the sheet? Something that you knew or didn't know. Please.
For me, the green top half would speak of trust building. The red would speak of trust deterioration, of taking away from a trust of a person. So let's say we start out at zero. If they were doing things in the green, it would start adding to that bank account of trust. And if it was in the red, it would take away and then gain in the red.
Great.
Good color.
And having the willingness to pay attention to your body, your mind, reactions and responses to be able to figure out where you are, where that zero line is. Having a person, place, or thing coming into your life and starting your evaluation by saying, where are they? What kind of behaviors are they exhibiting?
I just wanted to say it was interesting. In the red, I actually see a lot of my behavior. You know, refusing to trust or be trusted. Extremes, I either trust too much or too little.
Yeah.
Or having unrealistic expectations. I find myself doing that in relationships.
Thank you. So, what I heard you say is that you tend to be in the black or white of things, and that coming to the middle and seeing some of your characteristics and saying, maybe that's not so good, that I can see myself in the red zone. One last comment, question?
I find that in the red zone, I'm very comfortable, and in the green zone, I'm very uncomfortable.
Very good. So she just said that in the red zone, there's a degree of comfort for her, and in the green zone, a degree of discomfort. And when I started doing the trust work, that's how I felt too, because I knew all about the red zone. Don't bother me, don't change it, I'm okay. But having to take a really good look at learning how to trust and developing the green zone characteristics and saying, but I don't want to get burned anymore. I don't want to get burned anymore. But that, I have to realize that that was my inner child talking, not my loving adult. Okay, so this sheet is broken down into three parts. This is all about trust violation and rebuilding trust. The first part is about measuring the severity of a trust violation. Not just saying, I didn't like that, or gosh, that didn't feel good. Second part is what it looks like to rebuild trust, or requesting the rebuilding of trust and what that process looks like. And then lastly, this is called an uninterrupted pathway for healing, rebuilding, and restoring trust. So let's start at the top. I have categories here to measure the severity of a trust violation. One, magnitude, frequency, competency, new or old issue, gravity of personal value offense. So you may say, what the heck's all that about? So let's start with the top, the magnitude. Is it going to be starting at an annoyance, or is it going to move to devastation, that you're just truly devastated by what your best friend did, or your business partner, whoever it may be that you're talking about? Does it have a low or high level of importance? And this isn't up to me to decide. This is where you get to build your own sense of assessment. Not judgment, but assessment. Taking a look at a situation, person, place, or thing, life coming on, happening to you, and you did not like what just happened. So you have to go back and measure it and say, okay, was it in the 1, 2, or 3 zone, just some slight annoyance? Or did it live in the 8, 9, 10 category where it just devastated you and you're angry and hurt and wanting to run away or fight? So this is the first measure of trust, the magnitude, okay? You get to decide Not me, not your neighbor, not your recovery friend, not your sponsor. You get to talk about it with trustworthy people to learn how to measure the magnitude of what just happened to you. Number two, frequency. How often does it happen? For the situation of living in a domestically violent relationship, oh, it only happens once in a while. But is that once in a while enough to trigger the magnitude at a 10? Or my best friend was 5 minutes late for our coffee date. Does that happen a little or a lot or somewhere in between? If it's happening in the low end of things, two things may be going on. One is that you're nitpicking, or two is that you're in denial of how often this person, place, or thing is breaking your trust boundary. Competency. If I explode, I'm a rager, and I get thrown in jail because my partner called the cops and they put me in jail. So I go before the judge and the judge says, well, I'll tell you what, you got some choices here. You go to some anger management classes or you go to jail. And along with that, I suggest you get some counseling too. So I have a choice, and the choices are I go to anger management classes, go to counseling, or I go to jail. Those are my choices. If I chose to go to anger management classes, I could sit there resentfully, seething, planning on how I'm going to take care of my partner because I got the cops call upon my behavior. Or I could be sitting in those anger management classes sincerely wanting to learn about this anger that goes out of control. And it hurts people around me, and it probably hurts myself, but I can't access my feelings, and so I really don't know that. But if I have a sincere interest to learn how to manage my anger, then my competency in managing my anger, the more work I put into it, the more I practice it, the more competent I can be in going from innocent mistake to conscious misconduct. So we'll get back to this competency part. So if it's like a three-year-old saying, F you, they're pretty incompetent. They're pretty ignorant. They don't know what kind of words they're using, the damage it can cause. They just heard it from a neighbor or friend or their friend, you know, their parents. And so you really can't escalate your boundary violation because it's just a three-year-old saying F you or go to hell. But if it's a grown person that's close to you in your life, there has to be a matter of personal responsibility. And if they say F you or start to push you around, is it an innocent mistake? You get to decide. You get to say 1 through 10. How does that affect me? Next, is it a new or old issue? You get to say, when life comes at me again and I'm sensing a boundary violation, I have to really take a look at it and say, has this happened before with this person? Is this new business or is it old business just resurfacing in another form? And I have to be able to say, also, is this a non-communicated expectation? Does anybody have an idea what a non-committed expectation is?
Non-committed or
non-communicated? I mean, non-communicated.
Put your underwear in the laundry.
Assumption. Unspoken. Very good. Yeah. And so, if I don't like the dinners that you're cooking up for me, And I don't stand up to say, honey, I don't like the dinner that you're cooking for me. How can my honey possibly know that I have something going on internally that I don't like what's happening? That's an uncommunicated expectation. I want what I call good food, but if I'm not expressing my definition of what good food is, my honey's at a loss.
You're hoping they're mind readers.
Yes. And then there's this other aspect where I'm able to express my thoughts and feelings and define what good food looks like, the amount, the quality, the quantity, da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm expressly communicating to my partner who's cooking for me what good food is. And my partner says, okay, don't worry, Jim, we'll take care of it. And then again and again and again, I get the same old stuff. Nothing, no change. Nothing changes. And lastly, what is the gravity of the personal value offense? Is it infidelity? Is it a felony? Etc. Whatever this area is, gravity of personal value offense, it's a highly unacceptable thing beyond limits. It's like, I just will not tolerate that. And then you do. So you're going against yourself. So if you're able to experience what you're experiencing, but just being able to go down and list to yourself where you stand in each of these categories, you'll be able to figure out after a few times of doing this exercise where you stand. Is this a real boundary violation where your trustworthiness is being flushed down the toilet, or is it being honored? Any question on this way of assessing what's going on in your world? Any comments?
I think, for me anyway, because some of my trust has been, the magnitude's been so high, that even today when it's small, I react like it's high.
Very good. So the punishment doesn't fit the crime or something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody else?
I find it difficult to trust someone who won't see me or hear me when I try to communicate the problem that they're posing for me.
So did everybody hear that? He has trouble with people not hearing or wanting to hear him express his feelings about a trust boundary violation. Last comment, question?
And I have to separate whether I'm being triggered.
Yes, thank you for that. So the person said that there has to be a separation, whether it's really happening or is it just a trigger. Okay.
How to define my own personal value.
Very good. So she mentioned that she has to define her own personal value. So remember that the purpose of this workshop is to give you tools so that you can develop your own value system. Not Jim's, not your neighbor's, not your sponsor's, not your sister or brother, but your own. So you can take ownership of your life. Begin to take ownership of your life. And the difficult part will be the next step. First, you learn to recognize what it is that's happening to you. And then secondly, to figure out what to do. Can I get a volunteer to read this second part? Rebuilding trust and requesting trust, restoring trust. Thank you.
Rebuilding trust, requesting trust, restoring trust. Standing up to perceived trust violation. Speaking up, checking out the view of the offender. Communication request to stop behavior. An expression of apology and remorse for violation. Promise to remedy behavior and make amends. vendor taking initiative and ownership to reconcile. Confidence lesson required. Counseling, recovery, anger management, or whatever. Practice, practice, practice. Responsibility and accountability in action. Amended behavior becomes a habit. Trust restored through amends and forgiveness.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions on this list she just read off? Does it seem like something that is first nature to you, that has happened to you in your life? Okay, so I'd like to give you an example of what this looks like. The best example that I heard in a recovery meeting was that you and I are dancing with each other, that we're partners in a dance of life. Here we are dancing along and I'm stepping on your toes, and at first you don't want to hurt my feelings and so you don't say anything about it. But after a while, not only did I step on your toes and I keep hurting your toes, but I'm stepping on them with such force and with such frequency that it's really hurting. And you say, okay, here goes Jim, excuse me, but you realize that you're stepping on my toes and it really hurts. Can you? I just wanted you to know that. Okay, I'm sorry, I'll pay attention. So we continue to dance again. And the same thing happens. I step on your toes and you're getting really angry and you're getting really resentful. You're hurt, and yet you don't want to hurt my feelings. And so this is where standing up to the perceived violation comes in. You take a step back, take a deep breath, and you say, Jim, I already told you that you're stepping on my feet and my shoes are all scuffed up and it really hurts. And I already gave you this one last chance. So I just want to let you know, as much as I like you, you're a great fellow, but you're really a lousy dancer. So it takes a lot of courage to say something like that. Mm-hmm. So because I want to dance with you and I'm truly sorry, I say, well, I get it. I get it. And in as much as I really enjoy your company, I love dancing with you, I can totally understand that out on the dance floor with you, I'm out of control. And so I say, thanks for letting me know. And then I could either go back to my seat and sulk, or I can go back to my seat and call you dirty names in my brain and things like that. Or I can make a commitment and a resolve to correct my behavior. And so what I begin to do, because I want to make an amends to my friend, that's you, that I truly love to dance with, I go out and I take dancing lessons. And I take dancing lessons twice a week, and I take practice sessions three times a week. And I dance, and I practice. And I go through this process for a period of 6 months. And by the end of 6 months, because I've been really diligent, my level of competency has risen from being out of control to being a pretty darn good dancer. Because I was willing to make changes in my life to correct the behavior that was offensive to you. And so after 6 months go by, I come back to you and say, you know, I really miss dancing with you. And to show you how much I really care about being able to get back on the dance floor with you without stepping on your feet and without hearing you screech and pain and things like that, this is what I've done. I've taken dancing lessons twice a week and three times a week. I've had dance practice. Everything that I learned in my dancing lessons. I've done this for 6 months, and I believe that I'm a pretty darn good dancer now, and that if you would give me another chance, I'd really like that, to be able to dance again. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings about giving me another chance?
Absolutely.
More favorable than not?
Yeah.
Because I've shown you that I've been able to take a measure of correction to improve my competency.
My initial thought was she already got another partner in those 6 months.
And that's possible. And so in this process of men's business, it's not about changing the other person. It's about changing me. So whether it's dancing lessons or whether I've had to take counseling courses on anger management or learning how to not continue to lie, cheat, and steal. And I had to gain a certain level of competency so when I went up to the person that I had harmed and make those amends, it wasn't about that person instantly forgiving me. It was about me taking personal responsibility for my own ignorance or denial and definitely being out of control. So there are, will be instances where I make amends to people that I've violated our trust and they may say, forget it, Jim, you've had your chance. Or they may say, okay, let's do this slow, let's try it again. The proof will be in the pudding, my toast. And so this dancing lesson example is really a good example about making nine-step amends, where you ask for forgiveness, but you don't just make a promise. You walk the talk so that you don't step on anybody else's feet for the rest of your life. That's your intention. That you don't blow up into rage for the rest of your life. It's commitment. And so in looking at all these examples, standing up to perceive trust violation, that's something that you're responsible for. These people are not mind readers. These people may be in complete denial or ignorance that they're stepping on your toes or blowing you off with their anger or their unconscious deeds or their conscious deeds, that they want to hurt you, they want to hurt you bad, but that's none of your business. Your business is to take care of yourself. Your business is not to change anybody. Your business is to take care of your feelings, your thoughts, not anybody else's. And this is a way that you can do it, by measuring the trust violation and say, oh, well, I guess it wasn't really that bad. Or, oh my God, this is something that I've been bullied with all my life and it's really time to stand up and face this demon in my life. Setting a boundary. So in standing up, you have to speak up and say, okay, what does it look like to you? You know, here are my bloody feet, my scuffed shoes. Am I perceiving this incorrectly? And that'll be a really good clue for you if this person will ever be in the green again, because they've already made their way rapidly into the red zone. And if they say, well, you have to say, well, I'd really like to request that you stop doing this. And that might maybe in the way of let's dance less, or I don't want to dance with you again because it's much too painful. So look at the boundary violation, not only in the measure of the physical realm, look at it in the emotional realm. Or you really feel like you're not being listened to, you feel like you're abused, but you have to be able to identify it and communicate it to that other person. And if they're not interested in hearing you out, that's your cue to create some distance.
What happens if you're dealing with a person that's in their later years of life, and you know they're basically they're dying. I mean, I'm trying to incorporate some of these tools so that I do the right thing. Am I missing the boat?
Well, I imagine that it's a personal answer on how to address a situation like that. But we go back to that measure of competency. Is this person really aware of what's going on? Are they competent enough to address or correct their behavior that you're not liking? So somebody being on their deathbed, I would say from a personal point of view that if they've not done the work, that they probably will just act out even more because they're on death's door. So this next part will be your salvation, or it'll be your prison. So uninterrupted pathway for healing, rebuilding, and restoring trust. First, there's a trust violation, and you get to decide what that violation is, what it looks like, what it feels like. And then at this part, the relationship will take on another step. It's either going to continue to go south, or maybe you'll have the promise of a better future. So it's either going to be relationship deterioration or repair. And we all know what happens when you drop a glass. It shatters. And you say, can Humpty Dumpty ever be put back together again? Then we look at the offender's initiative to reconcile. I've been stepping on your toes all night long, and you finally tell me enough. So what did I do with that information? Did I say F you, or you're crazy, or minimize your feelings, or deny it? Or did I take an initiative to reconcile? So, in this uninterrupted pathway, just know that if there's no initiative to reconcile, you move this person out of your trust circle a little bit more. They're not showing you any initiative to reconcile. So, going back to the dancing lessons, if I took a dancing lesson once a month, didn't practice, I showed an initiative to reconcile, but was it enough for you to trust me again out on the dance floor? So within this path, this model of reconciliation, all of the dance lessons that I took are trust rebuilding activities. I went to anger management class, I went to AA, I actively worked a program. I actively immersed myself in a program of change to show you that I really meant business. That I wasn't just going to be all talk and no walk. So from that, we get to this possibility. It's not a given, it's a possibility of allowing me back into your life in the green zone. And it's solely up to you whether or not you're going to let me back into your green zone based upon all of my behaviors that I've displayed to you, all the actions that I've taken to restore my level of competency, restore your level of trust, and that I'm no longer doing any of these things on the top half of the sheet, but I'm doing everything on the bottom half of the sheet. That's your signal to consider, not automatically let me back into your life, but to consider letting me back into your life. Because once again, when Humpty Dumpty falls off the wall, can you put Humpty Dumpty back together again? Is it possible?
Nope.
To a certain degree, it will not ever be the same. But if the person has displayed enough willingness and enough work to show you that they really meant business. Then we get into this other area of the step nine work, that you can forgive the person for the crime or the trust betrayal, but you don't forgive the action. They're two different things. So if I have led a life where I have lied, cheated, and stolen things from you all of my life, and I amended my ways, what is your willingness to give me another chance? Maybe a little one, maybe a big one. But for the most part, if I haven't done any of these things, but I've always not trusted people because I always got the lip service, the promise. And because all the promises were broken, that just shut me down even more. So you are charged with the responsibility of how much are you going to let this person back into your life when they've broken your trust, when they've violated your trust boundaries. Does that make sense? And just know that if they're not doing this rebuilding part, take a step back. Don't let them back into your life, even a little bit, without these qualifications. You'll get burned again. So at this point, is it a matter of going into a relationship where you're getting burned innocently, or you already know about the possibility of getting burned again? Whose fault is it? Is it mine? Is it your partner? Or is it the job you have? Probably not. It's your choice. You get to live with the consequences. And so this is where knowing what trust looks like, what it doesn't look like, what the trust building activities look like, and all talk and no walk looks like. I know what that looks like. I struggle with that in my 12-step programs, and then I finally got it. I took dancing lessons. I'm still taking dancing lessons in other areas of my life where I am flat-footed. I may know how to samba and cha-cha, but I don't know how to tango. Okay? Any questions, comments on this sheet?
Yeah, Jim. I just want to say that the steps of rebuilding trust here, as we went through these, I personally understood that this is not so much what I need to evaluate someone with, this is just for me, that I needed to be the one to start the rebuild trust process. Not only that, but these steps are absolutely light on. And if my sponsor, whom we know very well, hadn't detailed these steps and walked me through these steps, I don't think I would be married today. And it takes, you know, it was very painful. It took a lot of work to learn the dancing lessons or to face the fact that I was stepping on toes. But I also think that this is an excellent tool for sponsees, for a sponsor who has sponsees, you know, caught in this cycle. And I also say the other half of that equation would be having a partner that could speak up for herself and had the communication tools like what we saw in the previous workshop. So, you know, it was that case of it taking two to tangle.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you for your comment. I have, woman over here? Yes. No, Wills, you were first, I believe.
I was just, if your issue is more sort of a fear to build trust with people in the first place, not so much that trust violations with standing relationships, but just a reluctance to...
Oh, reluctance to trust.
A reluctance
to learn how to trust.
How do you start addressing that?
Great, that's on the next page. Another common question?
What I noticed was this whole realm of building trust and requesting trust and restoring trust.
Yes.
It's what I can do with myself.
Yes.
All of these same things that I have experienced and losing trust in other people, I have experienced with me. So I get to work these steps and these rebuilding blocks and learning how to dance with myself without stepping on my own toe.
That's very good, to learn how to apply them to yourself first and then apply them to the rest of the world. Last comment or question?
As I listen to you, I realize there is a part of me that actually believes that this is the best I can get. In terms of having my trust violated, well, this is just normal operating procedure.
So that having your trust violated is just life happening to you, that you can't do anything about it.
Right.
Okay. So, thank you for your comments and things like that. So, let's move on to the next page. So, this is a relationship vital signs or an assessment tool. When you go to your doctor, whether it's annual visit, physical exam, or something's ailing, and you go to the office and you say, okay, doc, this is what's going on with me. Can you help me? So the first thing that the doctor does is measure your vital signs. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. How much do you weigh? What's your blood pressure? What it looks like in your ears, your eyes, and things like that. And so basically, the doctor is taking a baseline measurement of where you stand, and he or she will compare that to your past medical records and to say, oh, your blood pressure has really spiked in these past few months, or your cholesterol is amazingly low. That's something I'd like to hear, but it's not true. So basically, I have outlined some basic vital signs for you to consider and measure each relationship that you're in, person, place, or thing. Rate each relationship according to their trustworthiness level. 0, none, 1, low, 2, medium, and 3, high. And so, looking at this chart, we have characteristics and qualities of the trustworthy relationships also at the top of this row or columns. And these columns represent people, places, and things in your life. So, moving on, is this person accurate, open, and transparent in their communication to you? So you rate 0, 1, 2, or 3. And next line, makes commitments and keeps them. They walk their talk. Next line, engages in difficult conversations and problem resolutions. So I've listed a whole bunch of questions that you guys get to answer. And up here in the first column, you will assign a person, place, or thing that you're evaluating their trust. Okay? It can be your higher power, it can be yourself, it can be your spouse, it can be your lover, it can be your boss, it can be anybody you want it to be. But I'm just giving you a model on which to assess a baseline of trust. And at the end of this exercise, whatever numbers you have here, we'll add them up and we'll have the total here, and that total number will correlate with red, yellow, or green zone. I once did this with a sponsee, and her father, the sexual perpetrator, came out in the yellow zone. And so we had a very nice conversation about that, about her perceptions of what the trustworthy actions were and what they weren't, and her baseline belief system of what was appropriate and what was not. And after we discussed that for many hours, she came to the conclusion that it was about three. So just know that this is just a way for you to evaluate, not make a judgment, not to take somebody's inventory, but just to assess and evaluate the trustworthy relationships in your life. On this next page, I'm just giving you an example of what my relationship with whatever it was that I was evaluating looks like. Accurate, open, and transparent communication, I gave it a 2. Most were 2s. Questions and stands up to perceived violations was a 1. And my total score was about a 23. And in looking at this 23, that puts us in the medium zone, the yellow zone. And what I realized was that I was not able to take the risk of opening up to be vulnerable and honest with this person that I was evaluating. And so my level of trust was contingent upon my ability to be trusting mm-hmm. and trustworthy. And so if I went back and started evaluating my higher power or me in the beginning of recovery, I surely would have been a heck of a lot less than 12. So I'd like to give you a few moments to go back and pick a person, place, or thing to evaluate and do a really quick assessment on a line-by-line basis and putting a number next to what you're evaluating. Any questions? If you're experiencing difficulty in assigning numbers, just know that is a very common thing to do. Because when you're working in a new area of your life of assessment, and how does that pertain to you, not to me, but to you in assessing your relationship of trust with a person, place, or thing. So it's a difficult thing that you can get better at by practicing, and have no fear. Everything is anonymous. You don't have to say what it is that you're assessing, person, place, or thing. Nobody's going to find you out. Nobody's going to punish you. But learn about self-expression and how valuable that can be for you, because this is about you establishing trust with yourself and your higher power. I look at the relationship hierarchy as trusting my higher power, and then Jim, and then everybody else. It used to be the other way around. Okay, would anybody like to share their experience with assessing a person, place, or thing? Please.
It was a little challenging to assess with my, but I find that interesting and helpful, because that's really why I'm here, is to really get that huge trust with my higher power, 100% give everything to my higher power. So I like the evaluation.
Thank you. So in evaluating something so sacred as your relationship with your higher power, and knowing that because you've probably had some pretty negative experience with the old higher power, but to be able to bring a new higher power, one that's trustworthy, some person, place, or thing that you can rely upon, takes a really huge leap of faith. Correct? Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I got in the green zone. My higher power got a 36. And my boyfriend is also in the green zone. So it's nice that we're both in the green zone.
Wow, you did a lot of work in a short amount of time. Okay. Please.
Yeah, I did my best friend, and of course she's in the green zone. She's my one and only close friend, really, that my confidant. And then I was a little bit too nervous to do my husband. I'll probably have to go contemplate and meditate on that one.
Thank you. Thank you. It is difficult to express yourself. Please.
I did this on a former friend, and I'm questioning whether I made the right decision to end the friendship.
Mm-hmm.
This just completely validates everything, because this person got zero. Zero. I'm so glad I did not try to pursue this, because I would have just ended up getting, drawn in and being more hurt than I already was. So, extreme validation.
Great. So, I find that by having some tangible markers, tangible anchors on which to rely upon when my emotions are just like out of control. But to bring me back down and get centered in my mind and body and to look at all the stuff going on and to make a conscious choice, because my old way was either fight or flight. There was nothing in between. And there was no measure of assessing what was going on. And I could be talked out of what I thought would really happen. So by having this tool, this method to be accountable to my answers and be responsible to my answers, it really helped me to figure out what it is that I needed to do to restore my trust in myself, or how to patch up the relationship if it were reconcilable. And if it's not, I'm extremely loyal beyond what it needs, loyalty looks like in any relationship, for fear of abandonment, things like that. And so by having this tool, I have to be really trusting in my faith and my higher power to establish this boundary. And it seems like I'm stepping off a cliff when I'm saying no to that ex-friend of mine, because they're just not communicating. We're just not seeing life in the same light. But by stepping off that cliff and thinking that I'm going to free fall and hit concrete, this process of letting go in a conscious way is more like stepping off a curb. That it still takes work. It still takes time. Anybody else want to share there? Please.
I have a similar experience where I evaluated a previous friend that I crossed, and even though I saw the evaluation, they were at a zero, my very next reaction was to second guess that. So I saw that black and white and go, but he still has so many other friends. Maybe there's something wrong with my assessment. Rather than trusting the gut and trusting what's now a guideline of black and white, because this is my assessment.
Correct.
On my values. So I guess the next person I need to evaluate is myself.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I was interested, were you calling on me or someone else? Okay, what was interesting is I did myself, I expected it to be lower because that's my old baseline, my pre-recovery baseline. But when I did a partner in higher power, which got really high scores, I did myself next and was expecting much lower scores. But I was really surprised to see how far I'd come. Yeah, I didn't score as high as they did. But well, what a blessing it was to now, in this exercise, gain a new baseline that I can choose to reference rather than reference the old baseline and letting the old baseline define my
reality.
Reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
I was really surprised. I did mine with my mom, and I was surprised how I didn't have anything for my higher power. So I got to think about it some more.
Please.
Thank you.
I was astounded when I did my higher power, because I have such a really hard time giving up control. And I'm always saying, I don't really know. And when I did, how I was astounded to find out how trustworthy I really believe my higher power is. It just shocked.
Great.
I picked my therapist because I wanted to pick someone who I knew I had to trust with, and it helped me. I could relate with the person that shared about a higher power and rejecting a lot of my old, like, dysfunctional beliefs about my parents onto my higher power. So choosing someone I had a high trust with is like, oh, that's what that feels like, and I can bring that into my new experience with my higher power.
Great. That you have a benchmark to reference what trust looks like, and to reference and to compare what feelings you have along with your thoughts, because in doing this work of learning how to talk, trust, and feel, this is about getting in touch with your reality, nobody else's. Because growing up in an ACA family, we gave it all away to be safe. We gave it all away to survive, otherwise our lives are at stake. There's no question as to why we abandon ourselves for the sake of others. And unfortunately, we abandon ourselves to people that were not there for us. But there's really a good news message in all of that. When we were young, growing up in ACA families, we had complete dependency upon our parents, our higher powers, because we needed them to feed us, to clothe us, to do other things that we never got, but we must have gotten enough to grow up and survive life to where we are today, sitting in this room. So the greatest news is that we no longer have to be dependent upon people that we don't trust. And the real miracle of recovery is to take back that responsibility of dependency on our higher power and ourselves. That's where the reparenting comes in, where we have a new concept, a new paradigm of trust, in that I used to be really afraid of being abandoned as a kid because I thought I would die. So I better play the game, and I better play it right. But today, if I don't have a dependency on a false higher power, I'm in pretty good shape. But that also means that I have to create a responsible view of what empowerment looks like, what healthy dependency looks like. Not this Christmas kind of like Santa Claus, Christmas wishing of having everything turn out happily forever after. I have to be realistic in my expectations, to be responsible of how I view life. And once again, this is just a tool for you to use as a measure to get out of your mistrust, because pretty much everything in recovery takes trust. Turn your will in your life over the care of a loving higher power. If you're not willing to do that, your step work pretty much gets stopped right there. If you're not willing to take a look at your character defects, steps 6 and 7, and to let your old stuff go, your survival skills, your laundry list, you can't move to step 7 because you're afraid of letting go of that false sense of self that kept you alive all these years, but it also kept you pretty darn miserable. So there's a way out of this madness. And then by continuing on by steps 8 and 9, making amends. This is where you get to focus on reclaiming your life, the final piece of taking ownership of all of your actions, your behaviors, your misdeeds, and things like that, and implementing the things in life that really, truly, dearly, and lovingly work for you. You got the key to your recovery, the dancing lessons. So this last page, I have a recovery song that I really love that I'd like to share with you. So while it's about trust, it's about taking healthy risks, not being afraid.
promise me that you'll be a faithful child. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance,
thank you very much. I'm Jim. I'm an ACA, and I'm not nervous anymore. Thank you for attending.